Hi, now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And we survived another week of the heat.
I know. It wasn't quite as bad as
No, it wasn't too bad. This week was pretty hot. Last weekend was very hot. Walking around.
Yeah.
We were walking around Baltimore last week, and it was extremely hot and humid.
But we should have stopped by. I live there.
Oh, you live in Baltimore? Yeah. I had no idea.
Yes.
Well, I'm certainly glad that you come down here to the Washington area for Tech Talk.
And for my other job.
for your other job, too. Yeah. Well, AT&T started announcing their throttling plans. You know, we knew it had to come. You know, the iPhone is just using data at huge rates.
Yeah.
All the smartphones are, and so now they're beginning to throttle back. They've announced that program. I think they are just following in the footsteps of Verizon and Virgin Mobile and trying to throttle back the high bandwidth users. And that just leaves more headroom for the average user, so you get good response time. We have the dumb idea of the week we'll get into later this week.
I love when you do this.
Elite email. Get this. Oh, talk about it later.
Okay.
You pay a huge amount of money for a dedicated email address. It's ridiculous.
Do you have one?
No, I don't have an elite email. I'm more into the Gmail. I'm kind of the Gmail class of folks.
You got me hooked on Gmail. I'll say
Gmail is really, I love Gmail. Actually, I've got three or four email accounts, but Gmail is my favorite client. Pakistan is trying to ban encryption. They're trying to keep track of all of the traffic going on the net. I'll talk what they're trying to do there. So it's going to be actually a difficult task for them. And, you know, this debt ceiling debate this week, it turns out that the White House has been Twittering. They've been setting out Twitter bombs.
trying
to influence the legislators. We'll talk about the Twitter bombs. And, no, they could actually be backfiring, you know. I don't think it's going to be successful, but they are. Here we're seeing how Twitter is coming there. And the guy that I featured last week, I had the website of the week, the federal CIO, he resigned.
Really?
He resigned since the last week. I thought he was doing a great job, but...
It's all
relating to budgets.
Budgets.
And, of course, hackers are always everywhere. They've struck again on man tech. And SpaceX is set to launch. You know, we were worried about the death of the shuttle, and so now private enterprise is picking up, and they're set to launch some rockets that'll go on up to the International Space Station. Hopefully, the private sector can actually take care of that. And we will be featuring the man who co-founded Zynga. Zynga, of course, is the company that has Farmville,
right?
Cityville,
mm-hmm.
Frontierville, Mafia Wars, Zynga Poker, and many, many others. They are the top game application on Facebook, and it's quite an interesting story about the man that was co-founder of Zynga. And, of course, a heavy mailbag as usual.
There always is.
It's a very, very heavy mailbag. And so now it is time for...
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Yes. I have an email from Linda. Dear Tech Talk, my computer recently crashed. How do I recover my data? I mean, my pictures of all my friends and folders and other items that are on my C drive. I did a recovery, but I was unable to recover any files. Thanks, Linda. Well, Linda, I assume you don't have a backup.
Yeah, it sounds that way.
I mean, you didn't really mention it, probably because you're too ashamed that you're not backing up your data, but I assume you don't have a backup. And that, of course, is your best option, is to restore from your backup. But if you don't have your backup, then you have other options. First of all, probably trying to using recovery on your hard drive may have actually overwritten some of the files that you had there. It may have been better not to do anything with your hard drive until you recovered your critical data. Because even a recovery action can erase some of your files. So the safest approach to recovering files from a hard drive is to remove the hard drive from your computer and connect it as an additional drive to another computer. Now, you can actually get a USB hard drive case that you just plug your hard drive into it, and then there's a USB port that plugs into the USB port of your other computer. That way you don't have to get in there and install the hard drive in the other computer. And that's probably the easiest way to use your hard drive, as an external hard drive to another computer. Then you boot up the other computer, and it reads this external hard drive, and then you can basically look at the data on the drive, and you're not trying to boot up off of that drive, so it doesn't matter whether your operating system is corrupted or not. So the first thing you want to do is you want to search for any files that are on there. You actually want to do a, you want to set up a search and search for the files by name, because chances are when you did your recovery, you might have installed another version of Windows, which set up a new My Documents folder that was empty. Mm-hmm. And all your files are sitting off in some old My Documents folder that you can't even see. So if you search by file name, you may in fact find a subdirectory that's got all your old files on it, and you can copy them to the computer that you're using to read the C drive. So you can reclaim them that way. Now, the second thing you can do is that it may be that the hard drive has some corruption in the headers, and you can do a check disk slash R at the command prompt. You go to the command prompt in Windows, do check disk slash R. Slash R means repair it. When you find a disk error, repair it. And if the system file was corrupted by the crash, it's possible that check disk may uncover lost files. And if it reports something, repeat the previous step and search for your file. So it may find a corrupted directory that it will fix, and then all of a sudden your files can be seen again. So after you run check disk slash R, check for the missing files again to see if there's there. Now the program that I love, and I've used this program so much, is SpinWrite by Gibson Research GRC. You can download it from grc.com. Steve Gibson wrote that. We featured him as a profile on TechTalk. Now SpinWrite, SpinWrite will actually read areas that are unrecoverable, and it will try to fix them. Or if you get CRC errors, data reading errors, these are it will actually fix those errors. It will keep going back in and try to read it, try to scrub the area that it can't read until, and then it rewrites it, and it actually can recover sections of the hard drive that are unreadable. Mm-hmm. It takes hours for SpinWrite to run, so just run it and just let it go. And that actually would be your third option when you're trying to recover this system. Then there's another program that is now SpinWrite. I haven't looked at the latest price. It was either $29 or $39. I haven't looked at it recently. I think I probably paid $39 for it a few years ago. I don't know what it is right now, but it's around that dollar amount. Then there's a free file recovery program called Recuva. Recuva, R-E-C-U-V-A.
I don't know. They're trying to sound cool, I guess.
Run Recuva.
Uh-huh.
R-E-C-U-V-A. Recuva, it's a free file recovery utility that scans the currently unused free space on your hard drive for files and file fragments that are used to store there. And any files which were deleted by the recovery process but not overwritten by subsequent use of the hard drive could in theory be recoverable by Recuva. So those would be all your options to try to get back those files, those critical files from the past. Now, if you've got some extremely valuable data and you're willing to spend a few hundred dollars, you can send it off to companies that will recover data from your hard drive. And there are some very sophisticated techniques where they can recover data even if it's been overwritten. But if all they're going to do is do the steps that I've just given you, it's not worth a few hundred dollars. You have to find out what they're specifically going to do. And some of them are quite sophisticated. So if it's worth, if you've got really valuable data, you can send it off and pay a few hundred dollars to these disk recovery firms. But I've never really done that. I've always sort of done it manually myself. We got an email from Seema. Dear Dr. Schertz, what's the difference between a MAC address and an IP address? Are they traceable back to your computer? I think this person's worried about whether people can track down what they're doing on the internet. And can I hide these so people don't know what they are? And if I hide them, does that keep my computer safe from hackers? Thanks, Seema. Seema, I guess, wants to be on the internet and be, like, invisible.
Yeah.
Well, there's really no way to be completely safe from hackers, and your IP and MAC address are not always going to be hideable, actually, because these are the addresses that are used by the network to find your machine. So if they're completely hidden, nobody can find you. Mm-hmm. It turns out that the MAC address, now MAC stands for Machine Access Control, MAC, and that's the layer that actually addresses at the data link layer. That's the data link layer, and that's if you're going to have a connection from one machine to another, and you're not going through a multi-port network, but just going from one machine to another. You've got MAC address 1 to MAC address 2. And when the packets are sent at the data link layer from machine to machine, it uses the MAC address, which is the hardware address, to identify where it is going. Now, the MAC address is actually put in when the hardware is made. So if you get a network interface card, it's got a MAC address on it. If you've got a Wi-Fi port on your computer, it has a MAC address on it. It's a hardware address that's assigned just to your machine. Now, the IP address is the network address. That's the address that's assigned by a network that's multi-hops, where if you're going to hop through the internet, for instance, that's like your postal address. Somebody in California wants to send you an email through the internet here in Virginia. They'll have the IP address of your email server, and it will hop through the internet and will finally come to your router, which actually has your email server on it. And so the IP address basically is the address used for a multi-hop network, and it is the internet in the case of the internet, it's IP stands for internet protocol address, and that's the network address. Mm-hmm. And that's different than the machine level address. So what happens is if something comes to your house, to your router, your router has an external IP address, and so everything comes there to your router. Then your router takes and figures out which host within the local, local network it wants to go to, and it knows where all the MAC addresses are, and so it can identify the MAC addresses locally. But those MAC addresses never leave your local network, so they're never visible on the internet itself. Only the external IP address is visible. So there's really not much you can do. Your IP address is always going to be known by the internet, so they can get to you, and nobody's going to know your MAC address, so I wouldn't worry about it. And actually, MAC addresses can be spoofed. See, a lot of times, like I know there was somebody I knew quite well was at a dorm at K-State, and they were filtering who could get on the network by filtering the MAC address. And this person simply, who I'll remain nameless, simply did MAC address spoofing, and he took his laptop, and he basically assigned a different MAC address to it, and he got right on the network without any problems. You know, it was a very easy thing. So MAC addresses can be spoofed because you can actually change the MAC address that's used rather than have it read from the hardware. But that was a great question, Seema, and obviously you are a highly skilled network person to even ask that question.
Uh-huh.
We have an email from Alberto. Alberto said, "Dear Doc, when I go to empty my recycle bin, I notice there are a lot of files in there called BAC files. The extension is .BAK files. What are they and how important are they? Where do they come from? Is it okay to delete them? Love your show. I've been listening since 2000 to Tech Talk." Wow, Alberto. Well, BAC files are one of the oldest type of files known in computing. BAC stands for backup. BAK is short for backup, and it's a backup file. BAC files come from programs whenever they make changes to files. In general, a BAC file is safe to delete. For instance, if you use a Word program, let's say, to edit a document, and let's say you're editing a document, techtalk.doc, you make a lot of edits, and then you click Save. When you save the document, it does two things. Before it saves the document, it takes the current techtalk.doc, and it saves it to techtalk.bac, and then it saves the latest version to techtalk.doc.
Mm-hmm.
And so the BAC, the BAK, is really the previous version that you saved, and that just protects you in the event that you lose some, if you lose one of the files. Now, where this came from, a long, long time ago, when we had very small hard drives and people were working off of floppies, you would actually have two floppies in your, this goes back forever, two floppies in your computer, and they'd only have 1.44 megabits megabytes, you know, one of these small, three and a quarter inch floppies. And so you'd have all your doc files on one. And when you save the file, it would put the backup file on the other disk. So one disk would have the backups, and the first disk would have the docs. And so you would basically always store to another disk, and you'd go back and forth between the two disks. And so many of these programs, this filing methodology, dates back to those days when we were, you know, had severe hardware constraints. But actually, the fact is, I never use my .bak files. I mean, I never go to them, you know, because I have so many versions of the .doc that I don't ever use them. And so, no problem at all. You can delete them at will. Great question, Alberto. And thanks for listening to Tech Talk since 2000.
Exactly. Well, thank you all for listening to Tech Talk this morning. And we hope you will stay with us. We've got a lot more to talk about. We're going to have profiles in IT coming next. And of course, you're listening to us on these fine radio stations, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. This is Tech Talk. We'll be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge of Stratford University talking technology. And by the way, we are monitoring the Facebook page. You just want to go to facebook.com/Tech Talk Online and then go to the wall. Mm-hmm. Any comments there made during the show, we'll be able to see those and we might comment on them real time during the show. That's facebook.com/Tech Talk Online. Now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, we're talking today about Mark Pincus. You familiar with Mark Pincus?
I am not, but I'm about to become intimately familiar
Mark
with him.
Mark Pincus is the internet entrepreneur best known as the co-founder of Zynga. Zynga makes online social games, which most of them use Facebook as the underlying social network platform. His games include Farmville, Cityville, Frontierville.
Oh, so he's the guy.
He's the guy who's created all of these Farmville-aholics, Cityville-aholics, Frontierville-aholics, and I know a few.
Oh, there's plenty of them.
And once they get hooked on there, they are hooked for good. Mark Pincus was born February 13th, 1966 in Chicago, Illinois. He attended the Francis W. Parker School from kindergarten through 12th grade, and he graduated in 1984. Now, when he was growing up, he grew up with video and outdoor games, and he was really into gaming in his private life. He would play games with his family all the time. He loved sitting in the living room playing games. And his mom says, Mark, listen, you're not going to make any money playing games.
No.
Why don't you get serious with your career and just quit wasting your time on it? He says, Mom, I think there's more to this gaming stuff than you might realize. But Mark, start studying and get your career going. After he graduated, he did go and got a Bachelor of Science in Economics from the Wharton School. What is going on out
there
here?
This breaking update, we have a garbage truck operating outside the window of the studio.
You know what I think's going on?
I think they're trying to get every last thing loose in the bottom of that
dumpster. No,
no. Banging it off the
street.
I'm
telling you, I'm thinking we've got some people that want to play the pop quiz, and they're waiting out there to send sign language through the window.
It's like, you know, the inmates banging their tin cups against the bars. That's what it is.
Yeah. Well, he made his mom happy. He got a Bachelor of Science in Economics from the Wharton School. That's in the University of Pennsylvania, 1988. Then he spent 2 years as a financial analyst for Lazard Frères and Company, doing financial analyst work. He got fed up with that, and he moved to Hong Kong and worked a couple of years as VP for the Asian Capital Partners. Then he moved back to the U.S. He quit his job there. He moved back to the U.S. in 1993, and he enrolled in the Harvard MBA program. And he said, "Okay, I'm gonna work for this high-powered international consulting firm, Bain and Associates." So he got a summer job as an associate for Bain's. When the summer was over, they didn't offer him a full-time job. So his mom was saying, "You know, Mark, things aren't going well for you, you know." But he did continue on, and he did get his MBA from Harvard. When he graduated from Harvard with his MBA, he was the only student in the graduating class that didn't have a job. He said, "Mark, I don't know. I think you've spent too much time playing games. I wish you'd get your life together." You know, parents are like that. They're really worried about that. Okay, then he finally did get a job after he got his MBA, and he was manager of corporate development at Telecommunications Inc., which turned into AT&T Cable. A year later, he only stuck on that job a year. A year later, he joined Columbia Capital as vice president, where he led the investments group in new media and software startups for a year. He lived in Washington, D.C. then. So he could only take that company for a year. So you see, he was 2 years in a company, 2 years in a company, then 1 year at a company, 1 year at a company. Then he said, "You know, after my great success at working for other people, I think I'll start my own operation." And he started his first company, Freeloader.inc.
Perfect.
It was a web-based push technology service that would basically push all kinds of free offers out to people that signed up for it. That's why it's push technology. So you sign up for this and you say, "Oh, there's a coupon for Starbucks down here." Mm-hmm. And actually, he did okay with this. 7 months later, this was purchased by Individual.inc for $38 million. I mean, that's not bad.
That's not.
So he started Freeloader.inc, worked on it for 7 months, sold it for $38 million. He said, "Okay, Mom. What do you say now?"
Yeah.
So, okay.
How do you like me now, Mom?
Okay, pressure was off. He got $38 million. So then he started his second company in August of 1997, Support.com. Now, he was CEO of this company and chairman of the board. He built this company into a leader provider of service and support automation software. You call in like help desk, and then how do you track your help tickets? This was service and support automation, so you could automate basically help desks. And that company went public in July 2000. In 2002, the company changed its name from support.com to Support Soft Inc. So that was actually a successful startup. And then he got wind of social networking. In 2003, Pincus and Reid Hoffman was one of the big investors in Facebook. He's and also in PayPal. He sort of started out with PayPal. They purchased a broad-based patent that described social networking service, and this is the heart of all social networks. They purchased this patent from 6degrees.inc for $700K.
Wow.
Now, they believe that with this patent, they're going to be able to get royalties from all these social network sites because it patents the core capability of social networks. So that was kind of a strategic purchase on their part. I guess he used part of his $36 million to make the purchase. Then the same year, he started his third startup at age 37, Tribe.net. Tribe.net was one of the first social networks. What this was you would get your tribe online and you would sort of share your favorite web pages. And you could go, then all the tribe could log on together, and if one person would look at a web page, everybody could follow him. Your mm-hmm. tribe could follow you as you were surfing around the web. It was kind of an interesting idea, one of the first social attempts, but it was not financially successful. It really was a failure. But he did learn about social nets. It turned out that Cisco Systems acquired the core technology as part of their digital delivery system. And so, you know, he basically got out of Tribe.net. And after the failure of Tribe in 2007, really nobody wanted to invest money in him. He was sort of like not persona non grata with all the big venture guys. Yeah. But he decided that he started looking at Facebook, and Facebook around 2006, 2007, they opened up their platform. They defined application programming interfaces, APIs, that would allow third-party vendors to tie in applications that would use the Facebook platform. And these APIs would give you access to the user data, and then you could actually post things to their wall, and you could actually do all kinds of Facebook actions through these APIs, and they were letting vendors come in and develop all kinds of applications. So he decided, since he loves games, going back to the very beginning, he loves social networking, why doesn't he put the two together and use the Facebook platform as a venue for making social games? This was really the creative idea. He took two different ideas and put them together using the Facebook platform, and that's really the genesis of Zynga.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Zynga is named after Pincus's late American bulldog, Zynga. His first pet. Come on, Zynga. Here's Zynga.
Uh-huh.
And Zynga died, and so he named the company after his American bulldog, Zynga.
So Zynga lives on.
Zynga lives on. Then he wanted to house Zynga. He lived in San Francisco, so he bought an old potato chip factory in San Francisco to house Zynga. You know, it's the name of the building where the original Zynga was started was called the Chip Factory, as you might expect. And it was a 13,000-square-foot building. He bought it for $2 million. This is kind of an aside. He bought it for $2 million. Then he rented it to Zynga for $500,000 a year, $393,000 a year, something like that. And so that basically it was fully paid for by the time Zynga moved on. And then he sold it. He can sell that building now for around $4 million. So actually, it was a pretty good real estate play for him. But he's going to make a lot more money out of Zynga. Now, Zynga since moved on because now they've got a couple of thousand employees, so they had to move to bigger space. But he wanted to build a social network of games built based on the Facebook platform. Now, Zynga's got a lot of games now. They've got Cityville, where actually you build a city, and you get inventory. You build a city. You build all sorts of structures. You build playgrounds. You build whole infrastructure. They also have Farmville, where you design a farm with barns, with cows, with pigs. You got Frontierville, you got Mafia Wars, you got Zynga Poker, you got Cafe World, Treasure Isle, Yoville, you got Fishville, you've got Petville.
My God.
Now, in addition, Zynga has created a network which allows third-party developers to become part of the Zynga network. So they're letting application developers develop applications for Zynga. And so it's become quite successful. But in 2009, October 2009, he started Zynga.org, which is a nonprofit organization to raise money for nonprofit charitable devices. And he's raised around $6 million. He gave a lot of money, by the way, to Haiti after the Haitian disaster that happened there a couple of years ago. Now, as of June 2011, okay, let's get to the money size of this.
Mm-hmm.
As to June 2011, Zynga games on Facebook have over 270 monthly active users, 270 million monthly active users. Four of Zynga's games, Cityville, Farmville, Zynga Poker, and Frontierville, are the most widely used applications on Facebook. Cityville alone has 20 million daily active users, which is the biggest application on Facebook. Zynga, okay, get this, Mom, get this, Mrs. Pincus. Zynga is now valued at $15 to $20 billion.
Wow.
Okay, so games did pay off.
Mm.
Zynga filed with the SEC to raise up to $1 billion in an IPO July 1st, 2011 of this year. The IPO hasn't hit yet, but they're getting close to that because, you know, there's been a lot of really good IPO action out this year, especially after LinkedIn went big. So I think everybody's trying to, you know, gun for an IPO this year. He currently resides in San Francisco with his wife, Allie Pincus. She was founder of One Kings Lane. And he and Allie have two twin daughters.
What is One Kings Lane?
I have no idea.
I'm going to check that out right now.
You better check that out. So now you know all you need. Oh, there was one other thing that's kind of interesting about Mark Pincus. You know, the guy, you know, in the beginning, when you're starting something, you got really no money. And so he was giving this video presentations to some entrepreneurs out at Berkeley, and it was being videotaped and it was posted up to YouTube, and he just really spoke frankly. He said, you know, in the beginning, I needed revenue any way I could get it. And he said, I did some of the scummiest things that you could do to get revenue. You know, so if people would want to get free poker chips, I'd let them download one of these spyware toolbars you can't get rid of. All of that software trickery. He did it all just to get enough cash in the beginning. And actually, people were, and if you look him up on his tricks, you'll see that YouTube video. I don't think he should have been quite so so vocal and so forthright about what he did. But he, you know, all the stuff that you knew they were doing to get money, but getting all this junk loaded on your machine, they were. Now that Farmville and Cityville and Zynga have actually moved through and they're much further along the revenue line, I don't think he is resorting to those unscrupulous practices. But in the beginning, he admitted to them all. So there you go. Everything you wanted to know about Mark Pincus. He, of course, is a serial entrepreneur, and his fourth company is Zynga.
Do you know how his stuff got on Facebook? What was the connection there? Do you know?
What's that?
Well, all the games. How did they wind up on Facebook?
Oh, he designed them for Facebook.
Oh, okay. So
these were specifically designed.
I got it.
The social network fabric was provided by Facebook, and he wrote these specifically for the Facebook API.
I see. One Kings Lane is kind of a website for fabulous people.
Oh.
All the beautiful. It has all kinds of tips about decorating and entertaining, and they have recipes. I think it's your kind of website.
Okay.
You can go there.
We'll check that. Allie Pincus, that's his wife.
Yeah.
So this is just a company that was enabled by the Facebook platform.
Mm-hmm.
And see, Facebook has got almost 1 billion users. So he has 250 users. So one-fourth of the people on Facebook are playing his games.
Mm, that's amazing. You are listening to Tech Talk. Wow, that was a little loud. Whoo, welcome to the party. You're listening to Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2 and 103.5 FM HD2. Stand by. Hope you're paying attention. Your chance to win free food comes up next here on Tech Talk.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, 5 of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Yes, you are here at the Classroom of the Airwaves.
Yes, you are.
Not a radio show.
No, not a radio
show. Not a radio show. And, of course, if there's a classroom, there's going to be a test. Now, I hope that you were taking notes earlier in the show.
Yeah.
Because if you were taking notes, you're going to know the correct answer to our pop quiz. And the beauty of this pop quiz, if you get an A on the quiz, in addition to the A, because you get the right answer, you get two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room or at the Karim Dining Room in Woodbridge. The Escoffier Dining Room, of course, is in the Tyson's Corner campus, Falls Church campus. Earlier in the show, I was talking about Mark Pincus. He, of course, is co-founder of Zynga, the company that makes Farmville, Cityville, and Frontierville. Where did the name Zynga come from?
Good question. Hope you're paying attention. Now, how do you get the answer to us? No, you cannot take a dumpster and bang it into the building several times to get our attention.
Work.
That does not. It gets our attention, but it makes us upset.
You cannot write it on the side of the trash truck, which is driving outside the studio here.
No, you can't do that. You need to call us. You can do that several ways. One is by using your plain old telephone line and dialing 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. Or you can get those via Skype.
Go to Skype and go to Tech Talk Radio 1, which, of course, would be the username you'd want to attach. And just simply contact Tech Talk Radio 1, make a phone call to that. That phone call will be forwarded free of charge to the studio, and you'll be online from anywhere in the world.
Of course, there's this outside chance you can even send us the answer on Facebook if you wanted to.
That's right. Just go to Facebook.com/Tech Talk Online, and you can register the correct answer through Facebook, and we can tell when it came in by looking at the Facebook time.
We could do that, yeah. And you could also, we need to have Tech Talkville as a...
We need Tech Talkville.
Don't you think?
That's right, we do.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
that's
coming soon.
Oh, okay, good.
That's coming soon. Mm-hmm. Reports claim that Pakistan is trying to ban encryption under new telco law. Privacy International reporting that Pakistan is going to ban the use of encryption, including VPNs. This ban is part of a new law that requires telcos to spy on their customers. Encryption makes it tougher, so the response is it makes it tougher to spy. So the response is, we'll just ban encryption entirely. So we'll see how that plays out. Mm-hmm. Normally, these efforts to try to do this kind of thing on the internet don't work out so well because people do have workarounds. AT&T is finally starting to throttle data. They announced that starting October 1st, it will throttle data speeds of users with the unlimited data plans. So you just thought you had unlimited data. Once you get above a certain threshold, they start slowing you down. Slowing you down.
Uh-huh.
It's a throttle. So you're not really charged more. You just can download less. Now, they're following in the tracks of Verizon and Virgin Mobile in reducing data throughput speeds for its heaviest mobile users. Now, the more data-intensive apps are being published every day. And this is, and AT&T and these other carriers are worried that these data-intensive apps are just going to clog up the networks. AT&T says it will only affect the top 5% of its users. Now, it's not making it clear what the data threshold would be, other than to say it's the top 5%. Now, it'd be nice if they just give you a limit. Say, as long as you don't do more than 2.5 gigabytes in the month, you're okay. But they're not actually going to give you. It's kind of an unknown what the limit is. But we do know that streaming video apps and remote webcam apps, sending large data files like video, and some online gaming are examples that can use use bandwidth up quickly. Now, most users, or, you know, most normal users, really don't only use a couple hundred megabytes per month. And, you know, and to get up to 2.5 gigabytes per month, you'd be uploading quite a few pictures. You might be listening to some Pandora radio on the internet. But most people don't even get close to 2.5 gigabytes. AT&T encourages users to consume data over Wi-Fi whenever possible, because if you download those videos and do all that labor and bandwidth intensive stuff, when Wi-Fi is on, you're not using up your
right.
AT&T bandwidth, and that's really good advice. Now, the nice thing about throttling, it doesn't cost the users any money. I kind of like this idea better. Instead of having a fixed amount of data and then anything beyond that, they charge you an arm and a leg for. I'd much rather have you just sort of approach it and then they slow you down. So that way you don't get the shocker bill at the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
So actually this throttling, I think, is a very humane way to handle it without shocking people with big bills. I wish they would all go to this and get rid of the fixed bandwidth limits and simply throttle you down. And then if you want to buy, if you want to then increase your download speeds because you want to watch more video, you could just pay for some additional work.
Gotcha. We have contestant on the phone. Let's go to line three. This is Ed calling from Alexandria, Virginia. Ed, good morning. How are you? Ed, you there?
I hear something.
I hear something there. Let's do this. Ed, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
There we go. That's a lot better.
Okay.
Okay, Doc. Go ahead and ask.
Yeah, early
question.
In the show, we talked about Mark Pincus, of course, co-founder of Zynga. Where did the name Zynga come from?
He named it after his bulldog.
That's correct.
Yes.
Very good.
Ed, you're a winner. Doc, tell him what he's won.
You win two tickets to fine dining to either the Escoffier or the Karim dining room. They have got fine dining there for lunch and for dinner. We'll get those tickets out to you next week. Just stay on the line and give your name and address to Andrew. We'll mail those tickets out to you.
Ed, thanks. Have you been listening to us long?
I listen off and on, and I just turned you on this morning as I was doing some errands.
Oh, good. Great. Well, we're glad you're with us.
Stand by.
Andrew will be right with you. You are listening to Tech Talk. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Stand by. Be right back with more stuff after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge of Stratford University talking technology. And I am going to now feature the dumbest idea of the week.
I love this.
Elite email. This is the world's most exclusive email address. Elite 750 is an email service. They charge an initial fee of $7,500 for an email address, plus $750 a month as a service fee. Now, this email is available to only 750 people worldwide, so it is elite. And the number of accounts per country is very limited.
Mm.
So they might limit to maybe only 6 or 7 accounts per country. So if you have one of the elite email addresses, you are in the elite. Now, currently, they're sold out of all accounts in Bahrain, in Malaysia, in Germany, Monaco, Gibraltar, Argentina, Uruguay, the Bahamas, and Switzerland. So apparently, some people are buying it because these countries are already sold out. Now, the web address is elite750.com. This is truly an email service for suckers. $7,500 initial fee and $750 a month to be in this club. And then your email address would be like joblow@elite750.com. So you buy yourself in to one of the most, the elite group of only 750 people worldwide.
This is for people who have more money than brains.
That's right.
And so I'm looking at the homepage, and I think they are trying to use a comely young woman to attract
maybe so
people to use it. Yes. I see what they're up to now.
So there you go. The dumb idea of the week. Elite email. And just go to elite750.com if you want to sign up and join the ranks of the elite.
Okay, check this out. Current availability. This is as of Thursday this week at 5:07 a.m. We currently do not accept any new applications. However, if you fill out our application form. Wait a minute. The page kind of goes off the edge here. We will inform you when the next round of registrations will start. In the meantime, you might be interested in joining Executive 5000, the email address of Global Business Elite. Please find out more information of the website.
Apparently, Elite 750 sold out.
I guess so. So now they have Elite 5000. So they figured, 750 is not enough. So
I'm gonna find out who started this company.
I'm looking at
that
it now.
That is amazing.
I'm just thumbing through your contact. Doesn't give us any
names. I'll do some
like
more
that.
Work on that. Okay, Obama drops the Twitter bomb on the debt ceiling opponents. Mm-hmm. Now, the U.S. debt ceiling legislation fight ratcheted up all week. I actually had to just stop listening to it. It was getting to be too frustrating to listen to all of the banter back and forth. And Obama's campaign staff launched a Twitter bombing run on U.S. legislators. Shortly after, Obama made a short statement in which he urged Americans to make a phone call, send an email, tweet, keep the pressure on Washington, at Barack Obama, on an account run by Obama 2012 campaign staff. They began sending out the Twitter handles of Republican senators and representatives and asking the account's 9 million followers to tell those targets to accept the bipartisan compromise. This Twitter attack may have backfired and viewed by some as offensive, but yet again, Twitter is influencing its events, starting early in the year with the Arab Spring, earlier last year with the Arab Spring. Obama's data.gov CIO quits the White House. Vivek Kundra, who I talked about last week, because I thought he was doing a great job, and his, I featured his
website, CIO.gov.
He handed in his notice last week. You know, what is this? 1 week after I talk about him on Tech Talk, he resigns.
You are the kiss of death.
I tell you, I better be careful.
Yeah.
Now, it turns out that data.gov, his pet project, which was designed to use open data architectures to make government more transparent and to reduce government costs, has been running into serious funding cuts in recent months. Its budget was dramatically reduced from $35 million in 2010 to $8 million this year. This led to a campaign from the Sunlight Foundation to restore the government electronic fund. Sunlight Foundation wants to use open data as a way to make government more transparent. Open data enthusiasts over the U.S. said the cuts brought Obama's initial transparency and technology splurge to a halt. Tim Berners-Lee, of course, the man behind the World Wide Web, stated that he hoped the U.K. version of data.gov.uk didn't follow suit with budget cuts. Now, they argue that storing data in the public domain actually helped push down costs because there are fewer security concerns. Kundra is the first U.S. chief information officer, and he had been tasked with driving down government operating costs. According to the administration, this is, from their website, 2.5 years after joining the administration, Vivek has cracked down on wasteful IT spending and saved $3 billion in taxpayer dollars, moved the government to the cloud, strengthened the cybersecurity posture of the nation while making it more open, transparent, and participatory. His work has been replicated across the world from, in 16 countries that have deployed the data.gov model to tap into the ingenuity of their people in multiple countries and in order to save money. Actually, he's done a darn good job trying to leverage IT technology to bring down costs, make government more transparent. I Actually, I don't necessarily agree with a lot of Obama's initiatives, but this particular one I did. And it was a great initiative. I'm sorry to see him go.
Let's take a break. Okay. And while we go out on break here, I've got to tell you, off the Elite 750 website, I went to the pricing page, Doc.
Uh-huh.
It says, please do not inquire for discounts or trial accounts. Gotta love it.
Yeah.
This is Tech Talk. We are free, but we're not easy. So listen to us every Saturday here on Federal News Radio. 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Your free classroom under the airways comes back in just a minute.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. Facebook is now offering cash rewards for bug reports. Facebook has joined Google and Mozilla in paying cash rewards to researchers who privately report vulnerabilities that could jeopardize security. I think mm-hmm. this is a great idea,
yeah.
actually. And so these guys find it, and they find a way where they could earn money by telling the company instead of by doing things that are nefarious or selling it to unscrupulous operators. Facebook will pay $500 for the disclosure of most website flaws, such as cross-site scripting or any sort of errors like that. The company may pay more for specific bugs. Now, to qualify, a researcher must be the first person to report privately to Facebook about the bug. They must reside in a country that's not under any U.S. sanctions. Now, the move comes as good news to many researchers who spend considerable amount of time and expertise finding and reporting serious vulnerabilities in websites and software they use. More often than not, they don't receive much public acknowledgement and certainly don't get any money. Microsoft and Oracle should really listen to this. They ought to get on the bandwagon here. I think it would help them. I think it would help them develop better products. Mozilla was one of the first among the software makers to offer bug bounty programs when years ago it began offering $500 rewards. Google eventually followed suit. The two outfits gradually increased their rewards. Mozilla now pays up to $3,000. Google pays up to $3,100 for serious bugs. To date, Google has paid out more than $300,000 for bugs that have been reported to it. It's a pretty good program. I think it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like taking advantage of the open source. You let a lot of people look at things as sort of like open source viewing of your website, and it's just an excellent idea. You know, let's put this Netflix price in perspective. You know, people were complaining, and Netflix used to be $7.99 for either DVD delivery, for both DVD as well as streaming delivery. And then about three weeks ago, they basically started charging $7.99 for DVD delivery and $7.99 for internet delivery, streaming delivery. And if you wanted both, you were going to then have to pay double. And people just screamed about that. But loyal customers felt betrayed. They thought, man, this is just not right. But even at $16 a month, it's cheaper than than cable, than if you sign up for cable video. It's still a deal, but people were upset. But I wanted to go back and kind of study what was happening and why this was being done. It turns out, you see, that Reed Hastings, the CEO of Netflix, he realizes that in 5 years, DVDs are going to be dead. So his entire model of Netflix, which was mailing out DVDs, was going to be replaced by digitally delivered media in 5 years. And he did not want to be outfoxed by another company the same way that he outfoxed Blockbuster. See, when he started his direct DVD mailing and just, you know, had no rentals, you just, you know, you can just keep, you know, getting as many DVDs as you can use each month. And he basically put Blockbuster out of business. He did not want to put somebody else out of business. So he's made the decision that in 3 to 5 years, he's going to be all streaming delivery. And so by making this split, he's basically forcing more people to choose digital delivery and getting them off of the DVD, which is where he wants to go. It's also more profitable for them because they don't have to mail the things. And it will allow him, if he can force more people into the digital streaming media, it means he can upgrade that server, get more movies online, and it will help accelerate his transition from the DVD to the streaming media. So this is actually a strategic move and a sea change, and it might be the death knell for DVDs. Let's see here. Hackers strike a ManTech. We've got these hackers flying the anti-sec banner said that they were releasing 400 megabytes of internal data from the government cybersecurity contractor ManTech as part of their campaign to embarrass the FBI. Every Friday, they release data which will embarrass the FBI. So this last Friday, they said, today is Friday, and we're following the tradition of humiliating our friends from the FBI once again. This time, we hit one of their biggest contractors for cybersecurity, ManTech International Corporation, the hacker said in a statement on Pirate Bay. Now, in the summer of 2010, the FBI got this great idea to outsource all their cybersecurity to ManTech. The value of the contract was $100 million, so these guys just went in and they hacked into ManTech.
Nice.
That's nice. These cybersecurity experts for the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the batch of documents involve mostly NATO and other ManTech clients, along with Department of Homeland Security documents and other State Department and Justice Department documents. ManTech did not return any calls. The anonymous hacker group, which is part of the anti-sec alignment with the lulsec hackers, also boasted today about releasing DHS emails. So this hacking is kind of a theme which is going on and on and on and on. And that's why cybersecurity is such a good field to learn. And you can learn that at stratford.edu, Stratford University. Listen, we love your emails. Send us your emails at techtalk@stratford.edu. And make certain to go to the Facebook page, Facebook.com/TechTalkOnline. You can go to Tech Talk Online to get the podcast. We'll see you next week.
That's right, and this show is rebroadcast today at 5 o'clock.
Learn more about Stratford University Program's consumer information by visiting their website at www.stratford.edu/content_pages/view/degree-programs.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.